Blog Talk Radio.
Dynasty League podcast. I'm Rick Goreski, and with me tonight is the man. He is the champion. Make that two-time champion, the 2011 and 2013 winner of the Dog Bowl and the 2012 winner of the Table Scraps Bowl. I'm talking about the owner of Downhill From Here, Bill Novak. Welcome to the doghouse, Bill. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, Rick, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm a fan of the show. I've been listening for a while now, so I'm excited to talk some football. It's time of the season, so yeah, let's get going.
Well, I'm excited to have you on, man, because everybody, if you've been listening, they're name-dropping you. I mean, you're out there. You know, when we spoke the other day, you, as you said, you've been listening to the podcast, so you're more than aware that guys are name-dropping you. To paraphrase Steve Wellman of the Stone Forum Pallies from your own division, maybe I'll add a little fuel to that division rivalry here, but Steve wondered out loud how you keep winning. So any comments for Steve as we start this show?
No, it started with a good draft. Free agency hasn't been what I've wanted it to pan out to be. It hasn't been horrible to me. I have a good core of defensive players, and they like to play together, and they like to win. So
I was setting you up for a little trash talk, Bill. I was setting you up for some trash talk there.
My record shows itself with him. He hasn't seemed to have to bit that playoff bug in the back yet. But hopefully, I'll be able to fend him off for yet another year. The other team, the Gar-owned team, is the team to really worry about in my division, as far as I believe.
Now, people don't know this, but if you go into Mad Dog on the website and you go to reports and then go to records and then go to career records, you are one half game out of first place all time, total record all time. You are 37-22. You're a half game back. You've had a great amount of success in the league. And, I mean, believe it or not, Mad Dog, we're in our fifth year right now, 5 years later, and look at us now. Here you are, one of the top teams, two titles to your name. How do you feel about Mad Dog 5 years later? Where does this Mad Dog experience rate compared to other leagues that you're in?
This is my favorite league amongst all the leagues I do. This year I'll be in five leagues. I love the fact that it stays year-round. It keeps you involved the entire year. It makes you care about non-football-specific issues that go on. It makes you scout younger players. It adds a whole different dimension that regular one-year football doesn't bring. I mean, especially playing with such a great core of guys who do in and out every year the same great moves and the same great rivalries. It's my favorite of all of them, and I look forward to it more than more every year.
Well, Bill, let's talk a little bit more about your team's plea. Now, I've said it before, and I think I've said it on the podcast too, that people always walk out of a draft or an auction, and they're talking about who won. Who won the draft? Who won the auction? They're looking at the teams and what people did, and everybody's excited. You know, it's like spring training in baseball. Everybody's got a chance. And I've said this before, that given the fact that you won two titles in 3 years and a consolation tournament in between, there's no arguing that you won the startup auction. So going back to 2011, if you would, we're going to talk about your overall strategy later, but if we just take the owners back and the people listening, it's 2011. You're walking into that room to do the startup auction. You got $100 and you need 40 players. What was your strategy?
The first thing I wanted was a franchise running back. Arian Foster at the time was in his peak of his career. Didn't have a lot of injury issues at that time, but I wanted that one piece to build around. After that, defense was my next fight. I wanted as many good young linebackers as I could take. Laurinaitis, Derek Johnson, Thomas Davis at the time. All those guys are still on my team. They consist that core that I wanted to build. Rob Gronkowski has been a very big part of my team. Robbie's done some great things. I got him on a whim, on a guess as to whether he'd be good or not. Unfortunately, I didn't sign him long enough when I did, but I've reaped the benefits of his great career so far. So he's been great to our winning tradition also.
So I actually did something similar to that myself. So I have been very successful in the league too. So I think it proves that strategy was, in hindsight, the way to go. But that was the startup strategy going back to 2011. Why don't we fast forward now to 2015? And you're looking back over the past years. How would you describe your overall philosophy now that you came out of the auction, you had your team? I mean, to me, you've been very smart and methodical with your moves. You're very shrewd. You seem to, you know, be very methodical in your building plan, and you stick to it. I never feel like you're out there making panic picks. How do you describe your strategy?
I always take best player available. I don't care what I need. As it sits right now, I have 10 defensive linemen on my team. On a regular week, I start two, but all of them have been good as far as stat-wise, and it's tough for me to let some of them go. Robert Quinn, I drafted when he was young. Michael Johnson, I drafted when he was young. They're still with the team. It's real tough for me not to reach when it comes to the draft. I wouldn't take a certain player over a certain player knowing I needed that position, but I always look at what we have as far as talent-wise going amongst the different rankings and trying to pick what I want. But it always comes down to what player is going to do the best for me point-wise on a week-to-week basis.
Now, in my opinion, the closest you came to making a panic pick, because you don't do that, like you say, you kind of stick to your strategy, the best player available. You're not trying to go out and kind of Mike Sherman-esque fill a hole by trading up to go get a punter. I'm not trying to exaggerate here, but I'm selling the message, the vision to our listeners. You know, you'll hang in there. You'll figure you're more of a Ted Thompson in that respect, where you'll find a way to fill that hole later. You're not going to be forced into doing something. But last year at the auction, you were trying to pick up a quarterback, and guys could see that you needed a quarterback, and I felt like some owners moved in to block you, raised the price a little bit. Do you have any comments as to how your team wound up in the situation you are, where you're heading into last year and you didn't have a quote-unquote franchise quarterback or a every-week starter? I mean, it's not like you didn't try. You drafted E.J. Manuel in the past, and I know a lot of owners have told me they've contacted you to dangle quarterbacks in trades, but you've stood pat. Can you tell everybody about your quarterback situation? Because when I talk to other owners, it always comes up, yeah, Bill's quarterback situation. I think you were even joking last year at the auction that your son was ribbing you about it.
But the first 3 years I used Matt Schaub. When Andre Johnson was in Houston, there was a definite connect between them. All the pass completions he had to Arian Foster. For some reason, 2 years later, he just couldn't throw the ball. He stayed on my roster for another year. I hold on to him to hope that he would do something with Oakland. He never did. So that bees it. I filled those holes with Kyle Orton. I filled those holes with whoever was quarterbacking Chicago after Cutler had a breakdown. I did what I did to fix those spots. Last year, if I remember right, Ben Roethlisberger and Eli Manning were the two quarterbacks that were available at that time. I was bound to get one of them, either one. It didn't matter to me. Ben Roethlisberger went off the board first, I think, for a much higher salary than my Eli Manning at $5. I think I would have paid up to $10 for Eli Manning. It's been a blessing that Odell Beckham Jr. has turned out to what he has been. I appreciate that, and Eli Manning will be the quarterback of my team for the next 3 years. So until that gets to be a point or until he gets injured, I'm going to have to ride the wave of the New York Giants this year.
And you did get Eli Manning for $5 last year, just for everybody that's listening. So you got him for half of what you were willing to spend. That's a good move. And once again, now the Giants offense seems to be growing, so you've once again maneuvered yourself into a really good position. What NFL GM, if any, would you say that you come closest to? Are you a draft and grow from within Ted Thompson type, or are you a go-get-it, make-it-happen Ron Wolf type? Do you have any thoughts on what GM you would compare yourself to or your philosophy?
I think I would have to go with Pittsburgh's Kevin Colbert. He keeps his draft. He likes his players that he has. I still have 14 players on my team out of the 40 that originally were with me in 2011. He does the same thing. You look at the names that are in Pittsburgh with Harrison. I know Polamalu's gone, but he was there for a long time. Roethlisberger, Bettis was there for a long time, all during his career. I can't name a lot of super free agents that have gone to that team to make a huge impact. All their running backs, Le'Veon Bell, I know he was drafted by them. There's a lot of heart that goes with him that goes into that team. He's been there for a long time. So I'd have to say Pittsburgh.
If I could move on to the next question. Team names often have a special meaning to guys. Now, going back to the start of 2011, you were simply known as Bill's team. After the first championship, you changed your team name to Downhill from Here. Now, why did you pick Downhill from Here? And on behalf of the rest of the owners, when exactly is that downfall going to start? Because, you know, myself included, some of us would like to win one.
Yeah, it was pretty funny for me. It took me a long time to think of a good name. Finally, after I'd won it a couple days later, I looked at it, and it's kind of an homage to King for a Day. As I remember, the first year that I was in King for a Day, I had won it. And to this day, I believe it's got to be at least 10 or 12 years later, I still have not won it again. It kind of makes sense to hold Downhill from Here, not at that time knowing what kind of success I would have had. But it, every time I look at it, it makes me remember how lucky I am to win when I do and how I do and how long it's been a drought in King for a Day and how I might have to turn a little bit more of my point scouting over to that league and drop a little in Mad Dog to let you guys win a couple.
You know, I'm laying it on thick here, but you deserve it. People have to understand. I know the guys that are in the league understand. For anybody that's from King for a Day or friends that are listening in, Mad Dog is filled with competitive owners, and we all started with the same, you know, $100 of bidding dollars to go out and get our team, and it's amazing what Bill's done with his team and his division. That division has just been a dogfight. We're going to talk about that in a moment, but kind of related, as the years have unfolded, do you have a favorite rival or rivals, a team or two where you get a little extra enjoyment out of beating them?
Of course, Steve. The Stone Farm Pallies are a tough one every year, but like I said, it's kind of like a Packers-Lions rivalry where it's kind of one-sided. The one guy that I really got to give the boot to is Gar. The Beer Man Brawlers every year give me the biggest headache. And of course, we've been friends for a long time, so there's that too. But it's truly scary how that week pans out going into a game every week, knowing Gar that one of us is going to make the playoffs and one of us isn't. And with there being such a shortage of wild card spots in the league, it makes it even harder to know that if you lose that game, you might not even get the wild card. You might just be out of the playoffs. So I give Gar a lot of credit for taking the beatings he does and for not giving me too much shit about it. So, yeah, that's a good one.
Well, believe it or not, through the website, I can tell you that you are 3-5 against Gar all time. And believe it or not, the hardest team in the league for you has been, aside from Gar, Andy Wellman's Ipswich United. You are 2-3 against Andy. Everybody else in the league, you're either 500 or better. In fact, you've never lost to the franchise Show Me Your TDs.
Steve has alluded to it in the past. we don't get to play enough cross conference for it to make or for me to remember. But just to add a little bit of fuel to that fire too, the games that have really mattered for Gar and I believe I'm 2-1. So there may be that losing during the regular season, but when it comes to the playoffs, my team is ready.
So let's move over to that division alignment. What do you think of the division alignments overall in Mad Dog? And I think time has proven that each division is equally tough, but there's no arguing that your division has produced, as Steve Wellman said when he was on, 3 out of the 4 league champions to date have come from the white division. That and your division goes down to the wire every year. And I really mean it. I can pencil that in for 2015. When we get to the final week of the season, it's week 14, your division champion's likely going to be decided based on who wins in week 14. How you feel about these divisions?
I love them. I love playing the guys that I've known for a long time. And Tim comes in and does a great job also. I wouldn't be opposed to conference realignment. There are times where I'd like to see if my team would stand up against the likes of a different division. I don't think I would like to see if some of the people who complain about it would get their remarks either verified or shot down. That would be kind of cool to prove that. But no, either way, like I said, it's always nice having the rivalries. It's always nice having the guys in those weeks where you know that game means more to you than anything. So yeah, I like them as they are, but I wouldn't be opposed to change.
No. Kind of the rivalries are something that makes the league fun, and you touched a little earlier on the fact that it's year-round. What is it about playing in a dynasty league, and Mad Dog in particular, that makes this league so enjoyable to you? And what I want you to think about here is, if others listen that haven't tried a dynasty league, let them know a little bit from your perspective what's fun about this dynasty-style format and Mad Dog specifically.
As far as the salary cap goes, it gives it so much of an extra a difficulty factor that you have to balance in there. The caps that you have to use and the tags that you have to use, it makes you think not only about the year that's in question, but 5 years down the road, how your team is going to look, what you're going to need. I alluded to it before. Yeah, the year-round part of it is really nice. It highlights especially a bad year when the Brewers are doing horrendous and you need to start looking at football early. That break between football and non-football a little bit better for those of us that love football so much.
So, Bill, we got about 12 minutes left. I'm going to fire off the next question here. What are some of your favorite memories thus far in Mad Dog? Just as you think back, I'll throw out 1, 2, 3. I don't want to pigeon-toe you into one.
No. I mean, the championships, of course, are going to be great. But the sitting after Christmas and the stomachs in the pit of your feet when you're looking at that screen and when you wake up that Sunday morning and wait for those games to start with that sweat that gets on your palms, that brings you back to when you were a kid. Just unbelievable. Also, I look forward to the drafts every year. That's one of my favorite days of the year. It's one of the only days out of any day that I will request off at work on a yearly basis and know that I will have off. The camaraderie amongst all the owners, both with KFAD and with Mad Dog, is something that's, I think, unmatched in all the leagues that I've ever been in and the leagues that I know. So that would be that.
Yeah. For the guys that are not familiar, King Friday holds his draft every year 2 weeks before the first Sunday game of the NFL season. And right after the King Friday drafts, the Mad Dog Dynasty League jumps in and has their annual free agent auction. So it's part of that camaraderie at the King Friday draft just keeps rolling into the Mad Dog auction. Why don't we go into a few trade secrets here? Actually, let me step back a second. There is one more question I have for you. Every year, Mad Dog has a rules meeting. What is one thing that you would change or that you'd like to take a couple of moments to talk to your fellow owners about, maybe plant a seed in the minds of your fellow owners for next year?
To be honest with you, I thought about this question for a while. I really don't think there is any. I've been happy with all the decisions that have been made so far. The tide flows with Mad Dog, as you kind of know. It adapts to what the NFL does. The defensive backs, of course, are one of the big ones. The defensive linemen in the beginning, adding those. I personally think we're good and we're heading on the right boat, and if things need to be changed, they will be addressed, and we go from there.
And this is in no way thumping my chest, because all of us really had a heavy hand in putting this league together. So I hope everybody listening takes this the right way. This league is so well thought out, so detailed and thought out that it makes it fun. I mean, there aren't a lot of holes for us to try to fill, 5 years
nope.
in.
There's minimal arguing also, There's minimal anger amongst anything. Of course, emotions are going to get involved, but there's always that respect for one another that really draws it together.
Yeah, it's ours. It's kind of our baby altogether.
Yep.
Let's get into some trade secrets here, Bill. As you're aware, offensively, Mad Dog features a very unique starting lineup where you can start one quarterback, one tight end, and then four offensive flex, which are running back, wide receiver, tight end. Do you have a favorite formation, or have you found one that works better than others? I mean, the standard pro, two running back, two wide receiver, three wide. What do you like?
In the beginning, I was a big fan of thinking the four wide or the four running back style. You're going to get points from your yardage, and you're going to get those catches for being a PPR league. As the role of running back has devalued, though, I've had to adjust my thinking. You look at it being a PPR, and you're looking at possession receivers, they're going to get more points for you than someone who's going to play half a game. The days of the running back playing the entire game and getting 40 carries a game and getting that three-touchdown, 200-yard game are over. So you have to adjust your roster for that. That's how I'm going to start believing now, as shown by the draft picks that I've made in the past couple of years, Kelvin Benjamin, Brandon Cooks, and then this year, the rookie from Tennessee.
So let's move over to the defensive side and ask you about that, because that our defensive lineup, two defensive linemen, six defensive flex. Do you, you've been the one that went all out on linebackers early in the past. What is your favorite defensive formation?
To this day, it's going to be all linebackers. It's really hard for me to take a big-name defensive back, because if you're a big-name defensive back, they're not going to throw the ball to you. I like to put my players in the position to get points, and if you're a big middle linebacker, if you're a big outside linebacker and they keep on running at you, your points are going to roll right up like they should. So that's my goal that way.
So, Bill, more trade secrets. What sites or magazines do you like to patron? Part of the shows that we do is to help other people in the league that maybe aren't aware of some of these different resources to learn about them. What do you like to do?
I have no qualms in even saying this, because I know that there's multiple people amongst all of us that use this. FFtoday.com, FantasyFootballToday.com is a wonderful resource, especially on a daily basis to see what's going on. Another one I like to use is fftoolbox.com. Both of those are highly used by a lot of fantasy football experts and are patroned by a lot of people that know what they're talking about. So those two are pretty decent.
Well, let's roll it right into the rookie draft. How do you prepare for our annual rookie draft?
I look at a lot of different rookie rankings. I'm amongst five or seven different websites, and then I compare and contrast how they have them ranked. And I try and judge, especially based upon what the previous picks as far as defense and offense have been taken. This year was especially tough. I had a chance to take a franchise or maybe franchise quarterback, supposed franchise quarterback, over a known starting middle linebacker, the first middle linebacker that's been drafted in the first round in more than, I believe, 10 years. So I of course, had to go with the known factor, the one that's going to get me the points.
Well, Bill, that was actually my next question is, knowing you don't have that quarterback in the future, a lot of owners have talked about, and they were surprised that you didn't take Marcus Mariota. That's the guy that was there for you, and instead you chose New Orleans linebacker Stephon Anthony over Mariota. Could you detail a little bit more what your thought process was? How much did you consider Mariota? What, at the end of the day, what was it that made Anthony the guy for you?
Going back and looking at the quarterback rankings, only four of the top 25 quarterbacks that are in the NFL right now in points and Mad Dog were drafted within the last 3 years. Until another quarterback such as an Andrew Luck gets out there and is that guy who I know that is going to get me points on a yearly basis, not on a weekly basis. I'm not going to waste the first round pick. They're too valuable. Once again, like I said, I have a 5-year starting linebacker on my team now, barring any injury, knock on wood, but I would take that any day over someone who I don't know is going to be on the same team 4 years from now.
I cursed when you made the move. I loved Anthony. It was a guy that I very much wanted to fall to me with the first pick in the second round, and it didn't happen. The rich got richer, as I said. What are some of the best moves that you've made in Mad Dog over the years? Going all the way back to the startup auction.
Yeah, no, I like my startup auction. I think the Eli Manning pickup last year is going to be a big one. He had 347 points last year. He actually led my team in points this last year. And going forward, I made the playoffs last year. I went out early, but I still made the playoffs, and I think that this is going to be another positive effect on my team for this year.
Bill, what are some of the worst moves that you've made? I mean, those are some of the great ones. We all stumble at times. So what are some of the moves you look back on and you say, that really didn't work out well?
My first draft, when I look back on my first draft, that I could have done way better. Of course, in retrospect, you know, you're gonna second guess yourself and say, oh, man, but I did not like my Colby Fleener pick when I took it, but I did do it. And after that, especially when you're starting with the 12th pick, it doesn't go much better from that. But, of course, I've had some much better luck in the last couple of years with my draft, but I've also taken a lot more seriously. So that's something that we've had to adjust our drafting style, but it's been taken care of.
You know, I'm going to throw this impromptu question in there because I know that the Marauding Minotaurs owner, Brian Cox, has mentioned many times how much he loved Fleener, and he's got him. I think he picked him up off of waivers when you released him.
Yep.
What made you cut Fleener instead of hanging on?
There was the other quarterback, the other tight end, excuse me, I do not remember his name.
Dwayne Allen?
Dwayne Allen, of course. He was drafted that same year, I think two rounds later, by the Colts. But he took the starting job. Fleener was, when you have Gronkowski, it's tough for you to keep someone who's getting a quarter of the points. I know he was young, but it was just a move that was made to open up a roster spot. Fleener, of course, he'll be doing better and better and better. But like I said, Gronkowski is going to be a yearly starter until he's not with my team anymore.
Sure, and Fleener did start much slower than Allen. Allen took the early lead in that, let's call it a competition down there.
Yep.
Let's move to the next couple questions left, and then we're out of here, buddy. We're running low on time. Has the strategy of another owner caught your eye, or have you found yourself admiring the job of another owner or two that they've done over the years?
Yeah, Gar, his pickup of Peyton Manning, I mean, I was real skeptical when it happened, but that turned out to be a franchise quarterback that's going to be I'm going to have to deal with still for another at least a couple of years. That's another daunting task, knowing how many points he puts up each week, and it kind of makes you sick to your stomach. Honest to God. And you, Rick, I don't understand how you got your 14 or 15 picks you had for the draft this year, but knowing you retooled your team for the next 5 years. Granted, we've had our fights in the past. You came pretty close one time, but I know you're going to be in my sights for the next couple of years too. So,
well, thanks for the tip of the hat, Bill. I tell you what, we're up against the clock. Anything in like 10, 15, 20 seconds, any comments in general you want to make before we close the show down?
Nope. I like I said, I've been looking forward to this. I changed all my Facebook pictures over to football. It's football season, and I'm ready to start kicking that butt again. So I appreciate for you having me on, and it's been a great half hour with you, Rick. So thanks a lot for having me on, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Well, Bill, thanks for coming on the show, and you've been a machine in Mad Dog thus far, so I can't think of a better way to close out the show than to crank a little Mr. Roboto on my radio here in the background. I want to once again tell all of our listeners to keep following the show via Blog Talk Radio or a podcast on your electronic device. More interviews will be forthcoming, as well as special features like the best of the best series that I'm planning for later this summer. Until then, on behalf of my guest today, Bill Novak, I'm Rick Goreski, saying thanks for joining me on another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. Yeah.